Hey guys, it's Fabian, and you are listening to episode 9 of the Drink Culture Podcast. On today's episode, Jared and I talk to John Rengel, who's the owner of La Margarita in Fountain Square, and Luke Schneider, who's the GM there and does a lot of their bar program. We really dive into the history of how La Margarita started and how they continue to stay relevant and some of the things that they're working on here in the future. John is a super humble guy, and we absolutely loved having the opportunity to hear him tell his story. So hopefully you guys enjoy that as much as we enjoyed having them on and talking to them. The second part of this episode will really focus more on what we drank and a little bit more education on mezcal spirits as well. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. We recorded on location again, so there's some awesome background noise that I actually enjoy, and hopefully you guys will like it too. So let's get into episode 9. What is up, everybody? It's Fabian. This is the Drink Culture Podcast, the official podcast of Indianapolis. I have my co-host here, Jared. Say what's up.
What's up, guys? You got Jared here. Super excited for today's episode. We're here actually live on site. This is one of the first ones we're going to do. So if we have any interruptions, don't mind that as we take ourselves through. But we're here at La Margarita, and I'll let the gentlemen go ahead and introduce themselves, and we'll kick it off from there.
Hey, how's it going? I'm John Rengel. I'm one of the owners of La Margarita in Fountain Square. Yeah.
You asked him if it was John Carlos or just John, and he pops in John Rengel.
I know. I was going to say
the actual pronunciation.
Rengel. We just spent 5 minutes
more
going over
known
what
as
his Rengel. Name was.
Right, and he changed it on the spot. Yeah, I like that.
And that other voice?
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry, I'm just talking over people now. That's not going well. I'm Luke. I'm the general manager here at La Margarita.
Awesome. So, yeah, we're in beautiful Fountain Square. Nice sunny day out. So, again, we've got John Rengel here with us. And for people who don't know you, as you mentioned, you are the owner of La Margarita. And I know that people can read the history on your website. And if anybody's been here, it's also printed on those menus.
Oh, yeah.
But for the people that aren't paying attention, aren't really reading it, go ahead and break that down for us. Tell us a little bit about how La Margarita started.
Yeah. Man. So I wrote that. I should know what it says.
You know, I was actually, before you even started, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I read it today, and it was really well written. Do you have do you have like a background in writing or literature?
No.
Or?
I mean, I wanted to be a sports writer when I was in college. Didn't pan out, and that's kind of how this came about. But it's not that it didn't pan out. It's just this opportunity presented itself.
For sure.
And this is kind of the direction we moved in. But no, it started, way back in the 80s, you know, the mid-80s. My dad and his brother, they had a restaurant in Broad Ripple, El Matador. That's kind of my dad's brother's spot. And my dad helped out. He got in with the race crowd there, ran that for, you know, quite a few years in the late 70s and the early 80s. And then they moved, actually, moved El Matador to Speedway. And then his brother kind of was out of the picture, and then he took over the spot, named it La Margarita. That's after my godmother, Margarita, and that was back in 84. And they were out at the track, right around the track. It was a big track scene, so like the month of May down there was just
insane.
Bonkers. It was like the Coke lot, like, you know, but like just, I wouldn't say like more professional, or I don't know what I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but it was like racers.
Debauchery.
It was a lot of drinking. I don't know.
Well, yes, Cinco de Mayo kind of kicks that off, right?
Dude, every time I think of that, for whatever reason, I think of like Budweiser girls and just like, I don't know, it's like a weird kind of crowd. You know what I'm saying? Like a total 80s racetrack kind of crowd. Like,
kind of like this t-shirt.
Yeah, kind of like that shirt. Turbocharged engines and just freaking race car drive, you know, just, I don't know.
So how long was that restaurant there in Speedway? Because I know it kind of moved around
a bunch. Yeah, we weren't there too terribly long. We kind of moved up to the north side after that, and we were there for about 20 years. So like 1990 all the way through, you know, 2010, we were up on the north side. And that was two locations. That was 86 in Township and then 96 in Meridian. And we came down here in 2011, so... Yeah, it's a long history. My dad passed away in 2000. My mom, still with us today. She's, you know, behind the scenes, does a lot of the work, but she kind of carried it, you know, since that point until I came down here in Fountain Square where we're at today. So
were you kind of the catalyst to bring it down into Fountain Square?
She asked me. We were at the Aristocrat before it burned down, and I was still at IU at this time. I wanted to be a sports writer. And she said... you know, what do you think about a restaurant in Fountain Square? And I was like, I'm for it. And it kind of grew from there.
Nice.
And then this was in 2010. So this was before, you know, I mean, Luke, when did you came in, like, what, 2012, I want to say? You were here?
Late 2011, 2012, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, you've been here for like five and a half years now. So, yeah. But yeah, it just, we took a chance. It was obviously different space down here at that point. The cultural trail wasn't finished. We're sitting in the window of the, of the patio in the restaurant right now. I mean, this whole thing was just a brick wall. There was nothing here. So it was a very different kind of a spot, like down.
Yeah,
down
I read somebody had a blog post about you and this place and the photos that they actually used. I couldn't even recognize what it looked like prior to what it is now. I mean, I think I came about here just to discover La Margarita probably like 2014 or so, maybe 2013. And have been coming back ever since. But yeah, those photos are completely different than what it is now.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was nothing. It was like a pile of grass out here. And it's crazy. It's been fun to watch it grow. So that's kind of when I came on board was back in 2011. It was like fork in the road kind of thing. Do I want to go pursue that writing thing or do I want to do the restaurant? And when I picked the restaurant, I think family and, you know, just the history and the product was good. So it's like hopefully good.
Looking back on it, are you glad you made that decision?
I don't. Yeah, I mean, totally, totally. Yeah, but it's like, it's still something, you know, you wrestle with.
Yeah, you know,
with.
You're gonna have those. Exactly.
It's like, I don't know. Seldom is like an opportunity like that presented, so it's kind of hard to like. I mean, I don't know.
So did you two know each other prior to the restaurant or?
We didn't. We had a strange, not a strange connection, but it was like. Would you call it serendipity, Luke? How did we?
I don't know. You're building it up. It's really not that awesome.
I think it's pretty cool.
Well, yeah. So I discovered La Margarita on 96 the Meridian. My now fiance's dad and his partner used to go there all the time. So one of the first times I actually ever met them, they took us to La Margarita, and I was like, oh, this meatballs and chipotle is pretty darn good. And then fast forward to like a couple years later, that's not on the menu anymore.
Yeah, way to plug a non-menu item. Yeah,
right? Well, I think
that
was
the
first
thing. I was actually thinking to myself, like, call ahead.
The chipotle sauce, anything in chipotle sauce is amazing, so just get that. But yeah, that was the first experience I had with her dad. And then, that sounds weird. so then fast forward, it comes down to Fountain Square, and I was playing in a band at the time, and we were kind of slowing down a little bit. So I was
Stereo Deluxe, they rock.
That's debatable.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, don't. I mean, yes.
Wait,
or
I feel like I've heard that name before.
They were popular.
Fabian's a huge band dude. So
yeah, I used Stereo to be in a band as well. Maybe we'll do a separate podcast. $6 Suit.
Okay, I know that band.
It was
I know
like
the name.
Jam band, electronic.
Okay. Yeah. So what's the spot? The
Mouse Trap.
Yeah, the Mouse Trap. I don't know why I said the Monkey's Tail. Yes, the Mouse Trap. All right. I probably saw you there at one point.
Dude, right on.
Yeah.
Fabian's the only guy, I always joke with him, he's the only guy I know who's in a band that didn't play an instrument. So that's a whole other
story. They call those singers, I think.
No. I actually played, but I pretended, and we'll keep alluding to it, and I think we'll never tell the story. But
yeah, it's true.
Okay, perfect.
We're being selfish here, so finish that story.
My experience was going up there, and I liked it, and I saw that it was down here, and I was kind of looking for something different, and I'd worked in restaurants for a really long time, so I was like, well, and Sarah and I had come here to eat a couple of times and tried the tequila flights. At the time, it was this ridiculous contraption of just like twisted metal and shots everywhere, and it took up half the table. And I was like, I don't know why, but I really like this place. So I just applied, and then I started working here. It's
all
really,
that glassware has been stolen over the years.
Really? I broke most of it.
So was there a general manager position available, or were you kind of like, you know what, I'm just applying for whatever? And
I was a server right out of the gate.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I started there. And then just have slowly worked my way up. Kelly was the former general manager, and she left to go on maternity leave for kind of an extended period of time. And during that time, I kind of stepped into that position. But I mean, essentially at this point now, like, we're just a very close-knit sort of working relationship thing.
Yep.
I know this
familia.
Sounds really lame. Yeah, familia. The titles are less important than the result for us. So I think that my title is general manager, but everybody does a lot, you know? So kudos to them. Shout out.
We're shadow brokers. We
yeah.
Puppet
He's
masters.
A shadow broker. I'm out on the floor.
Yeah.
He's in the office.
Okay. Yeah.
So no, dude, I see you running around all the time. So I mean, you're definitely not shy. You're definitely not shy to run a plate out or say what's up to people. So I mean, that's
so John. Did you have to learn quickly how to manage people when you kind of jumped in here in 2011, or was it? Have you had that experience before previously, or is it kind of just like?
I mean, I always worked here. Like however ungratefully throughout my youth, I worked here. You know, but so you kind of picked up along the way, and then it. At a certain point, it became instinctual, but at that point, I was a lot more grateful for it, obviously. Yeah. That's kind of like a shithead little kid, you know? So it's like, you know, I helped out when I could. But I think once, you know, I took ownership, you know, then it was like, all right, you know.
Time to get real.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and once again, how ungrateful. But, you know, I don't know. I kind of like to stay out of the picture and just let, hopefully people do the right thing.
Yep.
I think that's the beauty of like working in the service industry in Indy. It's like, you know, it's a pretty like big group, but it's not, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Like,
absolutely.
There's a lot of good people in this city that kind of just get it. And we've been fortunate enough to have a lot of them come through the door and work here for us. So it's not a lot of babysitting. It's not like, you know, and we'll keep going back to it. It's like a family here. Yeah. You know, we've got a lot of long-term employees, so it wasn't all that difficult.
You have to babysit sometimes.
I was going to say, there had to be some obstacles.
I've had to be babysat before.
Yeah. Oh, me too. So,
yeah. Were there any particular, you know, that you can kind of recall obstacles that you guys sort of had to, hoops you had to jump through, or anything you had to do with employees or just getting a business up and running or coming down to Fountain Square?
Yeah, I don't know. The way it grew was very organic.
Okay.
That was the best part. We could kind of sort it out as we went, you know. We came in at a good time. We came down to this area kind of when it was just starting to like burgeon, so we kind of, you know, had a little bit more time than like let's say someone coming in now where you have to be like ready with your product and you know. We felt out the menu. We went through, I don't know, maybe like 3 or 4 iterations of the menu until we got to the point where we're at today.
Along those lines, I think one of the things that I love most and probably what brings people here outside of the food is the beer program and the tequila, mezcal, agave spirits program that you guys have been running. Literally one of my personal favorites to come and to bring people from out of town. It's a great spot to do that. But in 2011, is that kind of where it started, or is that something that also kind of grew organically, and how much... Obviously, was it all of your influence that brought that here?
That was the first thing we wanted to do. My mom was very into like kind of pushing the agave, but I just don't. We didn't have like, you know, a game plan. But as soon as we came down here, we pushed. We got rid of, you know, any mixer, you know, kind of like cheap kind of mix. We went straight, you know, like, you know, lime juice. And it's anymore now, it sounds like, oh, whatever. But, you know, like. 6 years ago, you know,
well,
it was like,
I mean,
you know,
yeah, 2011
like,
yeah, atmosphere was a different time.
Yeah, you know, there, you know, the craft cocktail boom, you know, but we wanted to do things a little different than we had done on the north side, and that, maybe that was just because I had a different palate than, you know, like a lot of the guests we had over those years. You know, we had Mr. and Mrs. T's mixer forever, you know, and you know, we still get requests for that now, but you know, I think that's kind of changed, you know, with the times. I mean, it's. People want a fresh lime. They want more tart, you know. That's just so we did that, and then we got rid of all domestic beer. We went straight craft as soon as we opened, and we got a lot of blowback from that. We kept Mexican beer on, but we got rid of like at the old restaurant. Our two drafts were Dos Equis Green and Coors Light. And when we came down here, we had 6 tap lines, and it was straight craft. And we took some flack for kind of. Because it was a pretty stark change. Like,
what did that look like back then? So those 6 lines, what was the big crap that you were pushing?
Man,
if you can
right
remember.
When we opened, like, I did a lot. We worked with Cavalier Distributing a lot. Mm-hmm. Like Founders, Peoples, Fountain Square was just, they kind of came on board right as we were getting down here as well. So those were really kind of like the big three. And then Sun King, obviously. We started doing Sun King up on the north side location in 2011. I remember driving down to pick it up every day. Not every day, but like every week from Sun King, you know, like a case of each, a WeMac, an Osiris, and a Cream Ale, and then driving back to the. I probably took like 12 home a week, so maybe that's why we're going through it so much, but that was kind of like the start of it, and like we saw like, you know, the potential for like kind of like a more, you know, I don't know. What's the word?
Informed,
you know?
Consumer base?
You know, I hate to say it that way because everyone loves, you know, just, you know, more honest product maybe, you know, something that was, here in town and relatable, I mean, almost. So.
I think we're in a new age where everyone wants to kind of know where everything comes from. They want to know the origin, very origin-based. Yeah. So I think you guys offer that between, the mezcal side of things as well as the beer side of things, which is really cool. Not many places do that, which kind of leads me into one of our next questions. How do you remain and continue to stay relevant? I mean, obviously you guys cemented yourselves in this area right away from the start before Fountain Square really be kicked off, but you guys still maintain. I mean, we're here, it's a Tuesday night, and still, you know, people are waiting to get to tables. How did you guys create?
Well, we knew you were coming. We have to
call. These are all paid actors. I think the thing for us that we've learned over time is that, like, change is something you really need to sort of embrace and also not be too precious about any idea that you have, and to try new things and to always kind of look at what's working in your business and try to maximize those things. I mean, this all sounds lame to me when I say it out loud, but those are sort of the things we think of, like, what's working right now? How do we make that better? What's not working? Why don't we change it?
Some of those things that you did have to change? Because if you look at the scene over the last 16 months, 18 months or so, there's been about 30 restaurant closings kind of everywhere around us. It's somewhat of an epidemic, right? There's a lot of places that have opened and closed recently. So to Jared's question, like, what are some of those things that have kept you relevant and changes that you've had to make to really stay on top of things and keep people coming back?
Well, I from my perspective, so the one strength that this place has always had is the sort of legacy of story and identity. So from my perspective, again, and I don't mean to sound vague and not answer specifics, but it's just like, okay, so, you know, when I went up to the Northside location and even down here, there was a book. The menu was a book, you know. Now it's a page. Granted, it's a large page, but, you know, you're just constantly stripping back those items that aren't as good of a representation of the quality of food that we want to deliver. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah. Sort of trial and error and a lot of that sort of stuff. I mean...
Yeah, the product was good. I mean, it was always good. It was just maybe it wasn't in the right place when we kind of left the north side. Or, you know, we could have done... There was more to do, you know. There was... You know, when you're operating out of the north side, you know, dinners are between 5 and 7 and then you're at home. Like down here, you know, we can get away with, you know, staying open a little bit later. And then dinner can be at 5 still, but it can also be at 9. And, you know, like people are a little more adventurous, so to speak, you know. The crowd's different. But we always had a good product. It was just kind of, there were like certain things that were just in there that we kind of had to have, you know, being in the middle of America, you know, there's, you know, cheese
you
is
get
king.
Chips and salsa.
Yeah. Cheese is king.
Queso?
You know? Queso.
Yeah,
direct
everybody
translation
wants queso.
Cheese, you know, it's like, so it's, you know, there was certain things, you had to have, but we wanted it like, and Luke says it all the time, and he's way better at this than I am, is like embracing the change. Like, just getting over it really quickly. We stripped away some of those things that were keeping people away from more adventurous, you know, in quotes, kind of menu items. And they weren't all that adventurous because they've always, you know, my mom and dad, when they wrote the menu, it was great, you know, but, you know, what kept us afloat, you know, like, you know, tequila and, you know, rice and beans and like,
Some good staple products.
Yeah, you know. So you, but we wanted to really, when we got the chance, make sure we made sure that, you know, that we had the signature items, you know, that were just kind of like the carne asada, the shrimp tequila, the chipotle, stuff like that. That kind of got drowned out in like the, you know, the combination platters. It's so funny talking about Mexican food in this.
That's what I grew up eating, man. So I mean, do you think that part of that? That changing with the times was you getting the margarita mobile truck. Like how did that come about, and what has that done for your business?
The truck was a fluke. Like how it originally started was, and he was just here. My buddy Keith Carey, he owns Some Guy's Pizza. He had the truck. It was the Some Guy's Pizza truck, and we had talked about collaborating and doing like a pizza taco truck. And Keith is a pretty savvy dude, and he said, "Why don't you just buy the truck?"
Was that inspired by that? By the Pizza Hut Taco Bell song?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Those like That's the best combination of any of those yum brands is the seldom seen Pizza Hut Taco Bell.
I would have to agree with that.
It's like all of them are like KFC Taco Bell. I'm like, no, I want breadsticks right. and chalupas. Like, yeah. I'm sorry.
I think you have to go to the airport, Ted.
Is that
like a throwback
any
to the
food
airport.
Court, really. Yeah. You just make your own.
Yeah, so that's how that started.
Well, I guess, too, back to your original question, and then a hurdle we kind of have struggled with over time is in doing these things, we constantly have to, like, re-educate our staff in how to present this new change because people have been coming here so long and sort of expect a certain thing. So it's like, well, maybe if you like this, maybe you should try this instead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then embracing the agave and the craft beer and the fact that it's an ethnic Mexican food, you know what mm-hmm. I mean, and all those things kind of folded in.
That was the toughest thing, like find out who your friends are, right? Like, you know, because some people, most people I should say, embraced the change, but some people were like pretty like hardcore against it, like written, like, you know, like letters, like, I can't, how dare you, kind of, like,
haters.
You know, like, it's just like you're like, I don't know, it's like it's weird. It's like a lot of people think you're like kind of,
well, you guys, I mean, you guys had to take a major business pivot, so to speak, where you came from, you know, a lot of different locations and brought yourself to almost a completely new demographic downtown. So it makes sense. And it had to be a little bit challenging to make that change.
The core is still there. You know what I'm saying? Like, the heart is still beating. And that's, you know, that's what we were always proud of. But we've just kind of stripped away some of the things that, you know. I don't know, just kind of got in the way.
So was there always a thought of expansion, and then that's how the food truck came about, or was it kind of just like you said, it was almost like a fluke where you're like,
it was just a random chance, and I was like, we'll do that. But I'll tell you, we would not have that if we did not have, you know, the mothership, so to speak, here. Yep. We would, you know, it's a tough business, and, you know, operating out of a commissary just doesn't sound all that, you know, fun. I, you know, to have the restaurant here it's amazing to have that, you know. Yep. And I am in awe of the people that do it without a kind of like a brick and mortar restaurant, mm-hmm. because that is a hustle big time.
We had a previous guest, Jake Kieneman, kind of fell into the same situation when he took over the what is now the 22nd Street Diner, and they kind of got their tongue-in-cheek indie food truck as well,
mm-hmm.
and had it not been for the diner, I don't think that they would have gotten the truck. So kind of going along with what Jared said about expansion and continuing to change, there was an article that came out around November of last year in the IBJ about you guys expanding to the CCIC. Tell us a little bit more about the concept there, and hopefully I'm pronouncing it right. It's Convivial.
Like convivial community
convivial.
Bar.
Convivial. Yeah. There we go. I'm
so
trying to put
wrong.
Some twang on it. Yeah. So
we may change the name, or at least the pronunciation.
You know, that's all right. But you know, what does that mean, and how is it different than where we are here at La Margarita?
It's I would say it's more bar focused. It's still going to be all ages. I always do that. I should say family friendly. All ages sounds like it's a venue.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
All ages. PG-13.
The Emerson Theater is all ages.
Yeah. I always think of that when I say that. But no, it's a totally unique concept to this. There will certainly be elements of this in that, but it'll be more of a kind of bar focused full restaurant still. The food, we're not really, you know, coming out and like saying what we're going to offer just yet. You know, we've got a very good idea of what that will be, but the big thing is just, you know, getting the doors open and, you know, hopefully doing the same thing what we did down here is just grow it organically. You know, we didn't want to come, we're not going to go out there and, you know, put out a thousand different, you know, stories about what we're working on. There's no like behind the scenes look, unfortunately, or fortunately or whatever. Depends who you're asking. But,
well, I think that restaurants like La Margarita, when you guys started in about 2011, really helped to be like cornerstones of neighborhoods and kind of help them grow. You know, the CCIC is kind of doing that same thing.
Yeah, it's a great building.
So, you know, do you feel that sense of responsibility to help revitalize some of these communities? And do you think that you've kind of helped shape where Fountain Square is? And if you're too modest to say that you have, I'm going to say that you did.
I think that this family has, and that has nothing to do with me being here. You know what I mean? From an outsider looking in, I would say that they have contributed quite a bit to this neighborhood, and I'm honored to be a part of that. So
yeah.
He doesn't have to say it. I'll
no,
say it for
but the CCIC, I mean, that's a good area. I mean, like, they don't need any help getting to wherever you're going. I mean, they just, I just feel like they would, they stand to benefit from more options, you know, like retail and, you know, food and drink wise, you know, that's a great area. I want to raise a family in that area, you know, like, so I just think it's an underserved area as far as that goes. That was the big thing. I like being in neighborhoods, you know, like, and I love Mass Ave. I live off of it currently, but in a lot of ways, you know, I feel like Mass Avenue is a street where Fountain Square is a neighborhood. Yeah, and yeah. I want to embrace kind of like the pockets of city. You go out of town and you go to places and you know, you get caught up in going to all the different little pockets around. Like, we're just in Portland and Seattle, and it's like, I want to be in like Wallingford. I want to be in, you know, all these different little, you know, I'm not going to go downtown, like, you know, so to speak, yeah, downtown. Yeah. What's down there? You know, Amazon. Well, what am I going to down there? You know, I mean, like, look at a building. Like, I want to go to the neighborhood and see how people are living and what they're doing. You know, they're the ones that are contributing to the city. So like I want to be like involved in that. And, you know, it just seems like a good area to kind of go and, you know, like be a part of like something. You know.
And we've been talking about it, but CCIC, it's Circle City Industrial Complex, correct?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
where what neighborhood is that in, or what streets is that off of? Just so our listeners.
It's off 10th and East, okay. Windsor Park kind of area.
Gotcha.
So, just near East Side, really. And it's got a Massachusetts the building itself has a Massachusetts Avenue
address.
Street address. Yeah. Yeah. But it's more residential, that side of just, you know, just east of the highway. It's a little more. It's
by
a little more.
Dorman Street over
by
there.
By Dorman
right?
Street.
Yep.
One of my favorite haunts. I love that spot.
Awesome.
So, we'll be over in that area. Hopefully we have a better idea of a date soon. I'll put it that way.
So this is kind of, if you can't answer this for, you know, reason,
I love
don't,
these questions.
But I own a business as well downtown, and we're actually in the middle of a build out and construction work well. And it was supposed to start 6 months ago, and we're not even started yet.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm always curious. Like, I read the IBJ article, I think it was from October, and said that you guys are going to be open early spring.
Uh-huh.
We're obviously coming towards the late end of summer, or towards the middle of summer. What's the hang up so far? Is it permitting? Is it just design? Is there just back end work or?
No, I just think it's a really big project, and it's got really good vision, and it's got a really good team behind it. And, you know, when you try to, you know, it's just, I don't know. It is a tough question. You know, I think we'll get there. I'm positive we'll get there, but, you know, like, you can put a you know, a timeline on anything. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. So, you know, I'm very very optimistic about it. And when it's done, it'll be awesome. That's what I you know, keep telling myself, because, you know, we've worked with these guys and they do a really good job. So, you know,
is there going to be like a full build out in that space, or is it going to be kind of like as use or as is type use? I mean, sure, there's gonna be a little bit of build out.
It needs
but.
Some, yeah, no, and it'll definitely need some work. It'll be pretty similar to this, actually. The size is actually roughly the same as La Margarita, so
okay.
About 2,400 square feet.
So if I were gonna put you on a spot and say, give us a date that this will be open, what would you say?
Just don't say the year and you'll be fine, dude.
Don't say the year.
I don't know.
Yeah, I read spring. It's summer.
Yeah, I read spring too. But I mean, that's fine. To be honest, though, just the way this year has gone, it's like that's completely fine with, I think, us. I mean, I know you feel, Luke, but I mean, I'm pretty comfortable right now. So,
yeah, I mean, I think for us too, it's like I think we have a pretty good idea and a pretty good team of people that are gonna be behind it. And speaking for myself at least, like, I prefer to do things than talk about things. And it's no fault of anybody's, but right now we can't do a whole lot. So yeah, not really saying
we've chosen
a whole lot.
To be like non-complacent about, you know, this whole thing. So we could just be sitting here, you know, twiddling our thumbs, but we're just kind of developing more and, you know, doing more, doing as much as you can behind the scenes. You know, we do have a three-way liquor license already, so that's a big, you know, hurdle
when that
for
can
that location
be,
you guys do.
Yeah,
that's huge.
So
that can
you
be
know.
A blessing in disguise sometimes. Yeah. As frustrating as it may be to have to sit around and wait, that can be really be kind of a pivotal point where, like, some of those ideas come up that can later on be executed. So.
Yeah,
there's always a positive there.
Yeah, that's a thing too. We're like, you know, we're hungry at the same time, so I think we'll hit the ground running, and I think it'll be really good, and we'll have all that kind of, you know, pent up, like, you know, energy for making it as, you know, worthy of that neighborhood as possible. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be there when it does open.
Hell yeah.
I'll definitely be there. So
I'll be there too.
That's good to know. So one of the things that, you know, Fabian and I always kind of selfishly love doing this, just because we get to learn about people, we get to learn about businesses, we get to learn about Indianapolis in general. One of the things that blew my mind was I didn't realize that there was a underground pinball operation happening here in Indianapolis. Can you give us a little bit of a background and where that love came from, or how that whole...
I'd love to plug the Pin Vault in the Fountain Square
love it
pinball classic, which is November 4th of this year, by the way.
So break
sixth
that down.
Annual, right?
Yeah.
The sixth annual, yep.
So there's a pinball classic that's an actual day. Is that like a competition, or is it
Oh, yeah. It's like the largest single day IFPA sanctioned pinball
Explain
tournament.
IFPA.
State.
I was going to say, wow,
like a pinball rankings kind of a. I
Are you nationally ranked?
No, because I've never played. I've never played in the tournament, so I've always had to like do the scorekeeping, you know. So I said when I finally do play in it, it'll probably be the last one we ever host. But
you heard it here first.
Yeah, right. Because I will win and I will destroy you. I'm not playing because I don't want to embarrass you.
Is the winner the wizard, the pinball wizard?
They are now, sure.
Dude,
yeah, that's
I mean, we
idea.
Get like we get like pretty like serious talent. We get like top 100, like top 10, even like world ranked players, and like it's surprising. There's a big scene in Ohio and Chicago. Ohio's more of like a broad kind of area, obviously, but Midwest has some really good pinball players. No, it'll be the sixth annual. We also do me and a few of my friends, we have a spot upstairs on the second floor of the Murphy, the Pin Vault. We're open first Friday, third Saturday, and we have a league actually too. So we're just kind of, you know, that was the thing too. Like when we opened here, I was like, there's nowhere to fucking play pinball in this city.
Like you're very passionate.
So selfishly, you're like, hey, I'm gonna move downtown, and I'm gonna.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, we're gonna host a tournament. We can put all of the furniture in this restaurant in a U-Haul and bring in, if we can find them, machines, and have a tournament. And we did that, and we partnered with 18th Street for that. We brewed a beer for it, Pinballer. We have DJ Mike Graves has been helping us out a lot, and then Dickie Fox before, if anyone, but also DJ BJ Brian Jones has helped us out in the past.
Lots of DJs, all the good
ones. A lot of DJs.
So did that come of about just from your passion, just like selfishly, I want to do this, and
we had the
we're
space
going
and
to
no
do
one
it.
Was doing it. Yeah, I was just like, let's have a pinball tournament. And I got on Craigslist. I got on like, I found like all these like boards for pinball, and I was like, hey, trying to have a tournament in Fountain Square. Like, you know, if you have a machine, like come by, we'll pay for your entry. And we still do that. You know, if you bring a machine, you get free entrance to the day, you have VIP package, all that. And you get to play and hang out. And it's fun. I mean, it's awesome. We've gotten a lot of good, you know, publicity at it. I think, like, we could do a whole other podcast on pinball, but I think there's definitely a renaissance.
You guys
underway.
Heard it. I'm marking that down right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, there is a renaissance going on right now in the world of pinball. There's a lot of independent manufacturers coming back into the fold.
Wow.
So it's cool. And we're just kind of, we just wanted to push that in the city. There was nowhere to do that.
I mean, you guys were kind of the catalyst for that, yeah?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Now you see places like Black Circle. That are really pushing pinball. Tappers has come in over in Fletcher Place.
Oh, and then Centerpoint. Centerpoint has like six machines right now. So I mean, Connors and Broderpool. It's around more than when we first started this, for sure. So.
Where's your favorite spot to go play other than your own?
Other than the Pin Vault, it's tough to say. It would probably be out of town. I'll probably go there this week in Logan Arcade and Logan Hardware and. Logan Square in Chicago is awesome.
Yeah.
Locally, I would say Tappers, obviously, and then also now Centerpoint. I mean, there's a guy named Bud. He's routes, and he's put a lot of really cool titles up at Centerpoint. So it's close to my house. I can run there, have a beer, play pinball, and run home. It's amazing.
You do live a pretty cool life.
Who doesn't want that?
Let me tell you.
I mean, Luke, do you get down on pinball?
Say, Luke, how are you in the world of pinball?
I mean, I'm the one that's really good at pinball. I would say, no, that's not true at all. I mean, I do. I'm more of like a classic arcade guy, though, honestly, man. So when the tournament happens, plus I'm generally working. I mean, I like that stuff.
Working
I've
is a very
better.
Loose term that day, because I feel like that's the drunkest that's, anyone gets in this building like every day.
Well, you
as
guys
far
are,
as you
are
know,
feeding
yes,
people,
that's accurate.
So it kind of works out, right?
Yeah. No, we got a reduced menu for that. Anyone can come, by the way. So if you guys want to come hang out. It's a great beer day, too. We do like an awesome 18th Street list.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about that. This is one of the things that... So maybe no. Well, no, I know for a fact no one's ever going to hear this episode unless they pay us money. But we had one of the first episodes where Jared and I kind of talked about who we wanted on as like our top five guest list. I think I professed that I wanted to have you on, John. So
they all said no. So here we are.
Well, no, not even that. But
you know, John was one of his white whales, and here we are. So.
Yeah. So it's cool to see in how short of an amount of time we've actually been able to accomplish this. But you know, Drew Fox is another person that I really respect what he's doing, and you guys seem to have an awesome relationship. I know you guys collaborate with Joey Potts, who does all of their artwork. Mm-hmm. How did that relationship start, and you know, where did it all begin?
Back in the day, it's
Wednesday. Wednesday, right?
It's such a stupid thing to say, but I mean, when like there was a brewery that wasn't being distributed in the city, which was like a lot, like I feel like I don't know the math on this, but like a majority of them at a certain point, like over the past 5 years. We used to just call them or like email them or text them or, you know, see them at an event and be like, yo, what would we have to do to get your beer in here? And that's kind of how that started. I can't remember how I saw Drew the first time. I think it was maybe I emailed him and I was like, dude, I love your beer. You know, I'm excited for you. Winterfest is coming up. What are the chances? We're having an event. You know, what are the chances we get you down here to do? He was like, let's do it. And that's kind of how it started. So, you know. That was, I want to say, in 2012. Yeah, 2012. So, it's been like 5 years now, too.
Dang.
2012 or 2013. A lot of 18th Street beer in between that time. But, you know, we hooked up with them. They all came in that night and hung out and got to know them. And we sat at a table and drank beer all night. We were cracking Canteons and, you know, just having a good old time. And I think that's like a lot of the, like, my first interactions with some of like the breweries that, you know, that I was like super into that you just didn't see, you know, on tap anywhere. It was just kind of getting to know. I mean, they wanted a beer, but it was such, you know, limited capacity at that point.
When our rules are, I mean, just rules of distribution are so kind of jacked to begin
with.
Yeah,
yeah. And they, you know, they went with a distributor for a long time, you know? So when that happened, it was like a game changer for them, obviously. But I mean, they're hustlers. Those guys are, they have my complete admiration for what they do. I mean, they just make it happen. Like, you talk about how do you stay relevant. Like, 18th Street would be like a perfect, you know, model for that. It's like everything they do seems to kind of fit in just with what you're after that day, you know. So
they kind of, you know, just took a rocket ship to stardom, honestly, in the beer scene. And my first opinion of them, and I kind of feel stupid for feeling that way right now, was that they were kind of in the shadow of Three Floyds. And I felt like a lot of what they were doing, and I'm sorry, Drew, if you hear this, I love what you're doing now, but I felt like they were kind of trying to kind of capitalize off of a lot of the success that Three Floyds had. If you look at the artwork, a lot of it's similar, but different all in the same. And they were really pushing a lot of different IPAs, but they've kind of come into their own and more than likely they were always in their own, but they really have taken off and have become, you know, a world-renowned brewery. So the fact that you guys have such a great relationship with them is one of those things that keeps me always coming back. I just know that you guys will always have something interesting from them that you can't really find anywhere else.
Yeah, no, I can see where they might like have been thrown in the shadow, and I think that's also like
I think it's maybe just because we're in Indiana and Three Floyds just happens
to be
here.
Yeah, you know,
here,
they
so
were
like
a monolith,
yeah,
you know,
right.
Where someone wanted to, you know, try to do like, you know, like aggressively hopped beers. I hate that word aggressive. I'm sorry. Wanted to do well hopped beers. I don't know. I mean, the artwork is, yeah, that's a whole nother. We should do a podcast on that too, because Joey Potts, and I'm going to see him this week. He's the man. Like, I mean, it's like he's helped us out tremendously. Him and Drew have been so good to us, so it's like it's reciprocal at this point, you know. And like, I mean, they're always up to something, and it's just like, and I mean, from like an outsider's perspective, you might be like, what's going on? But I mean, like, the way I see it, it's like it blows my mind. I mean, you want to talk about hard work, like those guys put in the hours, so they motivate me to, you know, stay busy, you know.
Well, it's cool to see collaboration. I think that's one of the things that I think Jared and I have found in talking to everybody is how collaborative Indiana is as a state, Indianapolis as a city. Everybody just wants to work together and seems willing to kind of raise the tide, right? The rising tide raises all boats.
Yeah.
Kind of mentality that we've already heard before on the podcast. But it's just, it's cool to see that, man, that you have that respect and they have that respect for you and you guys work so well together.
Yeah, no, I think that's what happens when you just get people that are like genuine, you know. We don't go out of our way, you know, seeking relationships. If something looks good or, you know, someone is like doing something that like reminds you of yourself, then, you know, go talk to them, see, you know, pick their brain, see what they're doing. And that's kind of always been our MO. That's that whole like organic growth thing. I mean, yep. I hate to like, you know, be shoving a product down someone's throat that they don't really need, you know. It's like, I don't know. You know somebody.